This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we have got some great guests, and that's plural. You guys aren't used to that, but we have two people that are on today, and I'm talking about Dan and Kelly Perez. Dan and Kelly met at the University of San Diego, where they both studied accountancy. They have always had a passion for real estate and began investing via house hacking in 2015, but started out-of-state investing at the end of 2018. They both currently have a portfolio of single and multifamily properties in Indianapolis, a city I'm very familiar with, and also have partners in a Kansas City multifamily deal, which I'm sure they're going to talk about today too. And they both live currently in Carlsbad, California, right just a little bit south of me here. Well, Dan, Kelly, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah, it is a pleasure to have you guys on here. Now, you guys are obviously not old dogs, but, you know, we always, you know, allow a few young pups to come in here every now and then and share their expertise. And I'll tell you, you guys have definitely done a lot in a very short period of time. I am dying to hear about it. But before we do, yeah, I just kind of want to hear a little bit about your backgrounds and you know, where you came from and, you know, maybe where you went to school, that kind of thing, and how you even, you know, thought of going into real estate.
Definitely. Yeah. Kelly and I are both from Southern California, and we met at the University of San Diego, where we both studied accountancy. And that was the career path that we chose to go down. So we're still both full-time W-2 accountants. We live in Carlsbad, California, so San Diego County. And we started our out-of-state investment journey in Indianapolis and Kansas City. At the end of 2018 is when we began looking into markets and starting to build our team. And then the beginning of 2019 was when we took down our first deal. Since then, we have accumulated 125 rental properties or doors, and 70 or so of those we own outright as 100% owners. And then the rest we have partners that we've paired up with on a variety of different deals. Our main strategy is the buy and hold strategy, where we have rentals for long-term passive income. And then we also have done a handful of fix and flips based on opportunities that the markets have given us. So we always try to remain flexible as the deals come in.
That's great. Now, did you ever buy properties in California?
That's pretty much how we got started was I guess you could say everybody has their one thing. Some people spend their money on cars. Some people spend their money on concerts or designer goods. I was always the type that I just wanted a house. That's, you know, that's was my main focus. I just wanted a house. But when you grow up and live in Southern California, just buying your first property is not cheap. You know, starter homes here can start in the 600,000s. So, you know, we worked so hard just to get that starter home. And then once we got that house, we actually just bought in a really good location, which I guess anywhere in Southern California is going to appreciate. But we bought in a great location and we let some of our friends stay with us. And that kind of helped certain months on the mortgage. And ended up selling that primary residence and rolling the gain into our next primary residence. And have been living in this house. And that house has a casita in the back, which also allows for rental income. So the only residence that we have in California is our primary. But we've kind of used it as an investment. We've looked into each property as an investment each time to say, okay, is this both going to be a place where we want to live and somewhere where we can, you know, make money while we're living there?
That's great. Now you mentioned that little casita in the back. Is it do you rent it out or is it an Airbnb or how do you derive rent or income from it?
We're big long-term rental people. So with our first property that we lived in, our first primary and this one, we've done long-term rentals. So we've placed someone that's been with us normally a little north of a year or two. And so both properties we house hacked. The first one was indirect. We had no idea what house hacking was when we first started doing it. And then as we became more and more immersed into the real estate community and culture, we realized, oh, this is what we're doing. Let's continue to do it because it's working for us.
Now, did you say you sold the first house? Is that correct?
Yeah, we sold the first property and essentially just rolled that gain into another property that we said, oh, this is, you know, going to be our forever home. We're never going to move. And then, you know, as it usually goes for us, after 2 or 3 years, we end up selling again and moving. So we keep on trying to reuse that money and roll a gain into our next property and kind of see where the market's at that time.
Gotcha. For the most part, when it's kind of unusual, not unusual, but it's not real common that you have both husband and wife that have a passion for real estate, which I think is really interesting. And how did you both kind of discover your interest in real estate?
It all, I think, came up with one of our friends who used to stay with us, her boyfriend really wanted to get into real estate. And I think with a lot of people our age trying to buy a primary residence in Southern California when you're, you know, out of college and you have student loan debt, and it's really difficult to buy your primary. So what a lot of people are turning to do in Southern California is, rather than buying your primary, people are actually starting with buying rental properties first out of state, because it's easier to do than it would be to buy a primary here. So we had a friend who wanted to get into real estate investing, and her boyfriend was really interested. So we all kind of talked about it, laid out a few cities that we were interested in investing in, did some analysis on our own, and then kind of brought our heads together and figured out, you know, what we want to do. And through that process, it took about 6 months of doing market research and identifying a city and then identifying certain teams and what PMs are great and what contractors are great and, you know, what should we be spending in certain cities. And throughout that process, we threw in a few offers to kind of feel the market and see, you know, what we could get. And we actually learned very quickly that we would not be great partners, my friends and us. And that's just because we work so differently. Dan and I are very decisive. And, you know, once we come up with an idea, we run with it and we immediately close. I feel like some other people might be a little bit more hesitant, especially if you haven't bought your primary residence before. So they wanted to think through it and they wanted to sleep on it and they wanted to, you know, do a little bit more research. And Dan and I also understand the risk in investing in anything. So, you know, we buffer that into our calculations. And if the numbers work, the numbers work and we're ready to roll. So we just looked at everything very differently. And then we realized, you know what, why don't you guys end up doing investing on your side and we'll invest on our side. And we actually never once closed a deal with them, but it was kind of collectively us all talking about it and getting the ideas that got us into real estate investing, even though we never ended up moving forward with them on a specific property.
That's a real key point. I think a lot of people want to partner with people, but it starts off great and goes awry, or hopefully it goes very well and they can move forward and they can complement each other's strengths and so forth. But it is a little bit different. If you're used to doing things a certain way and you're meeting people or working with people that don't have that same approach, it can be frustrating. But I noticed that you guys seem to have, I think one of the things that just makes it real interesting for me is you have a really good synergy where you both have your strengths. And maybe you could kind of elaborate on that a little bit on how your skills or your strengths complement each other.
Yeah. So Dan and I, in some ways, are the exact same, and in some ways are polar opposites. I would say our strengths, help us out in this instance, because Dan is very much so a people person. We call him the director of friendship, and he goes out and he will network with everybody and he will identify the properties. He's on the acquisition front. He builds the relationships. He makes sure that he's involved in certain groups and certain discussions so that he's following up with the market and the people in it. And I'm very much so on the back end, and I'm okay with that. Once Dan's identified a deal and has, brought me the numbers, I'll look at it. We'll talk it through, see if it makes sense for, our investment goals and our long-term strategy. And then I will help with closing on the property, getting it rehabbed, and then really my main job is the financing, the refinances and the private financing. So I'm very much on the back end, and Dan's very much, forward facing relationships, going out and meeting people and making sure that, our team is all set.
And when you say you're helping with the rehab, does that mean you're overseeing contractors as well?
So I have the opportunity of bringing the contractors and the inspectors through the property. I get to walk through the scope of work with them, talk about the vision of the property, where can we add value? If it's a rental, what's going to bring in more of a rent rate, whether that's an enclosed backyard, fully fenced, adding central AC, maybe some off-street parking, or if it's a flip, what type of area are we in? Are we doing granite countertops, butcher blocks? So I get to help make somewhat of the fun decisions up front. And Kelly, unfortunately, gets to do the cleanup on the back end, holding contractors to their deadlines, making sure that things are happening according to plan. And for each of the draw payments, she's making sure, was the work done properly? She'll do a video walkthrough with the contractors. So she makes sure that things are happening properly, and she's following our processes and systems to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks.
Yeah, it sounds like you're very systems oriented in the way that you not only manage your properties, but even the way you look for properties, it sounds like.
Right. And I would say that we are very process driven, but as far as systems and using technology, I would say that's actually one area that I know I'm personally behind on, and a lot of our competitors are far beyond us in that aspect. But I think where we bring the most value is just the relationships that we have with people. And we're very clear with the direction that we want to go and what we expect from our team. We're very tough on our team, and we have high expectations. When things go poorly or when things don't go necessarily to plan, we give them honest and timely feedback. But when things also go very well, we're also the first to thank them, give them a bunch of praise. And when we're in town, we're taking them to nice dinners, and just, we want to take care of our team because they're an extension of Kelly and I. And if they do well and if they're performing, so are we. So we all grow together.
That's great. Now you both CPAs?
Kelly is, I am not.
Okay. And now you're both have corporate jobs, right?
Correct.
And understand now you're moving. So, I mean, does that mean you're leaving the corporate world too, or are you just going to move to a different company and different location?
The only benefit that I've seen that's come out of COVID is that it's really pushed companies to allow remote working, and especially in the accounting and finance realm, we really don't need to all sit in cubes in order to get done what we need to do. As long as I have my laptop, I can do the same thing whether I'm sitting in an office or sitting in my home office. So luckily for Dan and I, our field of business allows us to kind of be wherever. And so my firm is allowing me to move to Jacksonville and work from Jacksonville rather than sitting in San Diego. And Dan's employer is also allowing him to work remotely. And that really comes down to the horrific events of COVID. The only positive that I saw that came out of it is that people kind of pivoted and allowed the employers to kind of give them the flexibility to work outside of the corporate office space.
Wow. And why Jacksonville?
So my family, I have a ton of family that lives in Florida. And so my parents and my sister are moving out there to be closer to family. And we really wanted to stay living close to family. So we said, okay, if they're moving to Florida, then really, you know, we're going to move to Florida as well, so long as our jobs will allow it. And once we got the green light from our jobs, it kind of just made sense for us because we really can sit anywhere and do the work that we do. And we'll also just be closer to, you know, our real estate company in Indianapolis. And the no state income tax doesn't hurt.
Yeah, so, tell me about that. It also happens to be one of the hottest real estate markets, especially for real estate investors. I wouldn't be surprised if you started looking locally too.
We will definitely consider that once we move there. The joke that we have with our team, they consistently ask us, are we going to move to Indianapolis to be closer to our portfolio, or do we plan on being there more often? I think we are very good out-of-state investors. Reason being is we're both very type A, and if we were in the market that we're investing in, I think we might try to have our hands in on the action a little too much, and it might be overbearing to our teams. So I really enjoy our relationship now where we have our check-ins periodically. We speak in the mornings. They're on East Coast time, so they're a little bit ahead of us. And they go about their business. They check in with us every so often, and we're fine. And I like how that dynamic is currently. So that would be something we would have to focus on if we do invest in the market that we currently live in. Just having that distance or separation from our team so that we're not necessarily in their hair all the time and bugging them while they're on the job.
Do you also build in checks and balances so that you can kind of hold folks accountable as well?
We do. And I think we were a little stricter up front before we had the trusting relationships with our teams. We still have processes in place, but I would say the number one thing that we did from the very beginning, and this was just us having somewhat of a verification system, is we're doing a rehab for a rental property or a flip. Before we send that final draw to the contractor, we actually have our inspector go back through with the scope of work. And he walks through and he says, number one, was the work complete? Yes. Number two, was it done properly? What if it's a rental, I don't want to have to go back in and do maintenance requests, which it just adds up and it tends to annoy the tenants. I want it done right. And then if it's a flip, we want to make sure we're delivering quality product to whoever's purchasing the property. So that was one item that we put in up front that a lot of our friends have also started implementing is we trust our GC. He does the video walkthroughs. He signs off. He does his punch list and signs off on all the work. But it's nice to have just that extra set of eyes as our inspector to go in and say, yes, this work was done properly. It was done. It's complete. Go ahead and send that final draw payment.
That's great. Yeah, that's out-of-state investing is not for the weak at heart here, you know. I mean, you definitely have to, even if it's people that you really trust and love, you do have to have those checks and balances, and you do have to, you know, follow up. And, I periodically have surprise visits where I show up in various, you know, places where I have properties too. And I think it's just good way to do that. Wow. Well, it's pretty amazing that you started in 2015, right? And you have now 125 doors?
Correct. And that spread across our single family portfolio, which is where we began the out-of-state investing. And then we are limited partners on a 32-unit in Kansas City. So we're not as actively involved in that deal. But I think indirectly, it gave us the confidence and courage to know we can go out and do larger deals. It's very similar to the single family homes in the sense that the process is very similar. But what I tell people is right now, multifamily seems to be the shiny object for a lot of investors. And we've enjoyed taking on our 54 unit that we just purchased in the greater Indianapolis area. But where the opportunities skyrocket, so do the detriment. So if you make a mistake, it's magnified just as much as if you make a good decision, it's also, you benefit greatly from it. So I tell people, it's great to graduate from single families into multis if that's the direction that you want to go. But that was our decision. We chose to go that route to help ourselves scale, and we've enjoyed it, but we're going to continue to do single family and multifamily moving forward.
Gotcha. Well, wrapping up in such a short period of time, I imagine you encountered your challenges along the way. And what would you say some of your biggest mistakes were that you learned from and helped you to go, you know, go forward a lot more focused?
One of our biggest challenges was partnering with the wrong team members. And what I will say about that is the way that we were able to build the team so quickly was we made calls to local investors, real estate agents, wholesalers, contractors, property managers, just to get a sense of the market. And mainly when I was speaking with other investors, it's who are you working with? And I know a lot of people aren't open to giving their general contractors names out right away. But as you build relationships, people are a little more willing to share, hey, I had a great relationship with this property manager. This agent really understands out-of-state investing, whatever it might be. And the one thing I'll say is if, even though, let's say a property manager or an agent works well with one person, it doesn't necessarily mean that their style will work with the next investor. And that's one thing that we just had to work out the kinks and figure out who works best with our style. We're very type A. We expect prompt communication. And we just expect a lot of our team. And some vendors aren't willing to have that type of control from their investors. And maybe they don't want that type of communication nonstop. And that's okay, but that's what we need. And so our biggest mistake was partnering with the wrong people up front and just hoping it would get better. And so now that we've worked through those issues and built out a team that we can trust and works well with our style, we're off to the races. But I will say our team might not work well with the next investor. So everyone needs to figure out who they want to work with, what type of person is that, and then build their team accordingly.
That's great. And conversely, what would you say is something that is your biggest success, something that you did that just really turned out to work well for you?
I think since our personalities are so different and Dan's able to go out and identify properties and do the acquisition, and he actually really enjoys that side. It's kind of his outlet, you know, before work or after work. I would say our biggest success is just being able to pivot properties. So identifying a property that would be a great buy and hold, and then bringing that to, so one example, we had a property that we bought for $60,000 from a wholesaler. And we wanted to flip it, and we were so excited. And then we realized, oh, shoot, it's under a lease until next year. And the lease is decent, but it's still under market value. But we ran our numbers, and we decided, you know what, it still makes sense to buy this, and eventually we'll have to raise the rent. But we put in $2,300 into the property, so our all-in was just over $62,000, and it just appraised for $117,000. So identifying a property and then being able to pivot and work with the financing or work with your strategy to see where that property can take you and not just always staying on one vision, because you can pivot and do so many different things with these properties.
Wow. That's great. That's great. You know, our audience are, you know, primarily folks, well, we have a real mixed audience. We do have a lot of younger folks that listen, but our target audience, let me put it that way, are folks that are 50 years of age or older, and they are approaching retirement or already in retirement, and they're looking at real estate investing as a means to either sort of boost up and get great returns on their nest egg that they've been accumulating all these years, or they're looking at real estate investing as a means to generate additional income so they can have the kind of retirement that they really, really want. And I think in both cases, you also have that interest in building a legacy that they can hand down to their kids. In your experience and just in what you're doing, and it looks like you're looking for the long term in your bio where it talks about, doing this for, family and so forth. What advice would you have for these folks? Now, granted, they're starting later, and so they really don't have the time for a sort of a slow ramp up. What would you advise them?
I would want to sit down and ask them, what are your goals and what is the time commitment that you have available to do this? Because that's one of the biggest misconceptions with real estate, is that it's a passive investment. The real estate that Kelly and I are doing, although it's considered passive income, it's not passive whatsoever, at least at this stage in our investment journey. We're hoping that it gets there, but there's a lot of work that goes into this, a lot of time, a lot of stress. And so I would want to speak to each person individually and say, what's your risk tolerance and what is the time you have available to commit to this? And from there, we would want to discuss, are you in it for cash flow? Are you in it for the long-term generational wealth? And then you back into the different options you have, whether that's investing passively through being a debt or equity partner and letting someone like us or another member of their team do the hard work, getting the team in there, doing the rehab and managing everything. Or if you have the time and you have the availability to do what Kelly and I are doing, where we're the ones sourcing the deals, we're finding the private lending, we're doing the full array of things that go into taking down a deal from start to finish, then that's another opportunity that they would have as well. So I think it comes down to the individual and which direction they would choose to go.
That's smart. Now, you guys both have a great background, especially for this business. And I'm just kind of curious here, how have you structured your investments? And, not only for tax purposes, but for, ROI and all the other factors that you want to try to max out in real estate investing and even asset protection. Would you mind kind of sharing that approach?
So when we started, we originally just had one LLC. We honestly did not think that we would grow at this rate, and we didn't think it was possible to do so. And so what we did is we just set up one LLC, and we started adding properties to that LLC. But as we got to a larger amount of properties, let's call it 10 plus, our attorneys had told us, hey, you're at a lot of risk having all these properties in one LLC. Because if something bad or unforeseen happens at one of these properties, all of those properties under one LLC are at risk. And so at a high level, because our structure is fairly complex at this point, we have two arms of our company. We have a C Corp on one side that is the owner I'll call it the owner of our rental properties. So we have a couple LLCs under the C Corp that owns the properties. And that's our flipping arm. Then we have another arm that has a Wyoming holding company. And under that company has 20 LLCs that are registered in Indiana and a couple other states. And that's where all of our rental properties are held. And that is filed as a partnership return. So that's our overall structure. We do have two arms, and they've been structured accordingly from our tax attorneys and CPAs and also our lawyers. And it's been going well, but this isn't a structure that we necessarily set up at the beginning, but it's something that we've grown into as our portfolio has expanded.
Are you trying to accelerate maybe loan payoffs on your properties, or you're just going to kind of keep going with the regular payments that you have?
That's been a discussion that we've gone back and forth with. It's, what's the vision for, our future and for our company? And we go back and forth between, do we want a lifestyle company where, we're comfortable with a certain number of properties and then we just work on loan payoff and we don't worry about adding more to the portfolio? Or do we want to build an empire where, you continue to leverage other people's money in order to build your balance sheet. And then you're building equity in each of those properties and somebody else is paying down your mortgage. So, you know, you're building an empire over time. I like the idea of both of them. The biggest difference is that when you're building an empire, it's a full-time job and it's a ton of work and a ton of time and a ton of stress. And so the idea is that, you know, when we have a family, we're going to probably want the lifestyle type of company where we maybe will start to pay down some of those loans and we don't necessarily need to be, you know, acquiring 50 properties a year. So it's something that we've definitely thought about. Right now, we're still, you know, ramping up. We're still, you know, finding deals and acquiring new properties. But I do see us in the future wanting to kind of slow down and start just paying off some of the debt and consolidating a little bit more.
Got it. Well, you know, speaking of the business, what really excites you about the future? As you move forward and acquire more properties, and do you have some specific goals in mind?
What excites us is actually one of the reasons why we also got started in real estate. We've seen a lot of our friends, parents, and just other colleagues of ours that they are able to travel whenever they want. They're able to go out to dinner. They're able to do whatever they want with their families, go to sporting events, whatever it might be. And it's not really dictated by a job schedule or job commitments. And that was something that was appealing to us, was what are they doing and what are we doing and how do we get to what they have? And how do we have that flexibility for when we do have a family? If I want to just leave at 3 o'clock and go to a practice or whatever it might be, that's something that means a lot to us as family and having that time to spend with them. And we're big experienced people. And so for us, going into real estate, what excites us is every acquisition or every property that we add to our portfolio, after it goes through, it meets our criteria and we underwrite it, we know that that's just one step closer to getting to be able to have that flexibility. Not necessarily saying that the second we get there, we both want to leave our jobs, but at least we have that opportunity to focus on family should we want to do that, or whatever it might be at that time. And that's what excites us. So our goal right now, we just throw somewhat of a high level cash flow number on each property. About $100 to $125 a property is what we conservatively put in our analysis. And what we say is, okay, if we're getting $100 to $125 a door, let's try to aim to get to $100 to $150 where we own them outright. And when I say outright, we're 100% owners. And at that point, that would give us enough flexibility to say, if we do want to leave our job at that point, we can, and we'll still be comfortable financially to do as we please if we want to just pick up and go travel or do what we want at that time. So that's something that excites us. That is our goal, but we're not in a rush to do it. There's some months where we don't acquire any properties, and there's other months where we'll acquire 5 to 10 houses. So we are always open to what the market dictates, and we just make sure that we have our funding and teams available for when the right opportunity comes up, we're quick to act on it. We can beat out our competition.
That's great. Well, yeah, time has been kind of zipping by here, and we are now at what we call our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions and you share resources that have been of value to you and that hopefully will be helpful to our listeners. So if you are ready, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
Let's do it.
All right. First question, favorite real estate book?
One Rental at a Time by Michael Zuber.
That's great. Great book. Awesome. How about a favorite business book?
Favorite business book would probably be Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright, which is Robert Kiyosaki's CPA. I love reading his books and following him, and Kelly and I really try to take his content and apply it to our business.
I was thinking that might be your favorite. Don't know why. Okay. How about the most valuable website for success other than your own?
I don't think we have a favorite website, but podcasts, we're huge on podcasts. Every time we travel or when we used to sit in traffic on our way to our W-2, we would just find new podcasts to listen to. Yours was one of them, the Bigger Cashflow podcast, which is actually one of our friends, Bo Kim. Love listening to his content. And One Rental at a Time, actually on YouTube, has some great information as well that we listen to.
And I also was joking with Dan the other day. So I don't know if other people know this or not, but Dan was looking on Zillow the other day and he was saying, you know, didn't you tell me that that house just had a big price drop? And I said, yeah, it did. And he said, well, it's not showing that on my end. I was like, well, are you on Redfin? Because I feel like two of the most used platforms are Zillow and Redfin. And Redfin is tied directly to the MLS, where Zillow does not have the same timely updates. So I would say my favorite website is Redfin because it tells me the second a broker goes online and drops a price. Whereas with Zillow, you could have a several hour or a day delay.
Okay, that's good to know. Great tip. Love it. How about a favorite app, something on your phone that helps you?
Facebook. It's simple, easy, and I attribute most, if not all, of our success to the relationships we've built. And there's plenty of groups on Facebook that we're a part of that have just added so much value to our journey and our development in real estate. And so Facebook by far is my favorite app. It's probably the thing that I focus on the most outside of work towards our real estate is building the networks and relationships through Facebook.
Oh, that's great. And how about a favorite quote?
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, that's Wayne Gretzky, isn't it?
No. Yeah. Great. Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gretzky's you go to where the puck goes or something. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're firm believers. Just take action and get involved. And it doesn't have to be purchasing a deal, but it's just somehow building your business and just go for it. If there's not a deal online that makes sense, start building your business. Get more private financing ready for when there is a deal. Build out your entity structure. Start talking with your CPAs on once you do take down a deal, what is the best way to structure it. There's a lot of things that you can put in place outside of just purchasing a deal.
Great advice. Well, this is our sort of final question here. If you lost everything, I mean, all of your assets, but knowing what you know, and you had to start all over again, but you've got only $1,000 in cash, what would you do with that, the $1,000, to relaunch your real estate investing business?
I would use that $1,000 to take people out to a meal, coffee, and also use it on flights to go meet with investors face-to-face and go meet with our teams in the markets that we're investing in. I think it's extremely important to constantly meet with the people that you're working with, fill them in on what you're doing and the value you're adding, and then also the value they can add to your business so that you can grow together. So I would use that $1,000 to take them out to a meal and discuss different opportunities and see how I could add sweat equity. They could bring the capital and let's start building a portfolio together.
That's great. Wow. Well, you guys, this has been awesome. There's been so much good information there, and you're to be commended. I'll tell you, it's just amazing how fast you've ramped up, but you're not just doing it wildly. You're very focused and very conservative in your approach. So I think you're going to have great success. I'm sure there's a lot of people, too, that would love to find out more about you or maybe even connect with you. If people want to reach you or find out what you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
Probably via email, which would be Paper Route Investments. That's PaperRouteInvestments. That's a mouthful. @gmail.com. I would say that's probably the best way to reach us, or Paper Route Investments on Instagram as well.
That's great. Now, you have to tell me the story behind that name. How did you come up with that?
We're really big believers of mapping out a game plan, planning ahead. So when you have a paper route, you have your defined route that you need to go on. And then at the end, you have to deliver. So that's how the name came about.
I love it. It reminds me, this is my first job. I think it was like, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. You know, this little stingray. I don't even know, you guys know what a stingray is, but the big handlebars up, you know, it's kind of like, and yeah, with my papers in front of me, that was a kick. And I was kind of like the kid that ran after people. Yeah, I want my $2, you know. I always had to pay the paper company each month instead of like, you know, bring in a salary. So it was pretty, okay. I didn't know if you had a story like that behind it, but hopefully you're not having to just pay. You're getting profit on it. But anyway, love my stuff.
If I was running the business like that, Ms. Perez would have me sleeping outside. So.
Yeah, I think anybody as Mrs. Perez would. All right. Well, you guys, we are at that moment here that we always have our guests close us out with their best old hound dog howl. Now, being Southern Californians, probably don't hear a lot of hound dogs, but hey, I think you guys can give us a good one. Are you ready?
We're ready, and I bet my dog's going to love this as well.
All right. Great. Well, let it go.
Howl!
All right, that's great. I love it, man. Oh man, that was actually pretty good for SoCals, you know, SoCalers. Man, thanks so much, you guys, for being on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thanks, we appreciate the opportunity.
The pleasure was all mine. I guarantee it. Also, I want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us today. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything that Dan and Kelly talked about today can be found in our detailed show notes. We really take our time putting together the show notes so that you get every little tidbit of information there, and you can find that the show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Dan and Kelly Perez. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.